Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to podcast 4 of The Thriving Marriage. We are so excited to be here with you today to talk about a really important topic. Today we're going to be talking about our trust restoration recipe. Plus we have a really special announcement that we're going to make at the end. So make sure you listen for that. So why are we talking about this? Because trust is such an important thing in a relationship. In fact, trust and intimacy, there's a really profound connection that we're going to share with you. But if trust has been broken in your marriage, then you know how difficult it is to move past that and to restore that trust. So today, Mark Johnston and I, we're international marriage experts. We're going to share with you our proven trust restoration recipe that has helped thousands of our clients, people just like you, to create healthy boundaries, heal from past pain, and restore the trust in their relationship. But before we get to that, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. He's going to share with you our win of the week.
Yeah, so I was thinking about what win would be appropriate, because we usually have a lot to choose from. And I was, you know, with the topic today, I was actually trying to find one that applied, you know, that especially was about trust. So now, when we share some of these wins, you know, sometimes they're just from posts in the Facebook group. When it's not from that, you know, when someone hasn't made their situation public, I always like to just change the names just in case. So in this case, you know, Julie started working with us after she had started some paperwork for divorce herself, which is usually not the case. Now, what had happened and why she actually came to us is, after starting the divorce process, things got really heated and her husband reacted with a lot of anger and hurt. He ended up moving out and cut off communication. And, you know, after a bit, you know, after some months of struggling with this, you know, Julie started reconsidering and she said, you know what, this was just wasn't where she wanted to go. And so she tried to fix things. And here's the problem, though, is that Julie had broken some trust. Things had become unsafe in their relationship. And, you know, a lot of these initial attempts to fix things were met with failure. And, you know, the excuse that was given is the damage has been done. I can't go back to this, is what her husband was saying. So this went on for a while, some months, and Julie had no idea what to do about all this. It seemed like things were moving towards divorce. Her husband started pushing on that process as well. And so Julie contacted us. And, you know, I'm happy to say that just this last week, I got some news that Julie and her husband are going to reconcile. Now, some of the things that really helped is, you know, Julie started talking with us and we started helping her to figure out how to communicate with her husband to make sure that everything felt safe, because that was one of the big complaints. Everything felt like her husband couldn't trust her anymore. Like, what's going to happen if he were to come back? You know, would things blow up again? Would Julie, you know, leave him? And that really made him uncomfortable, uncertain, you know, untrusting of the situation. So we worked with Julie for a while, trying to really craft some good messages, and really to make things a lot more safe and trusting. And, you know, so we were really excited when she told us, hey, you know, my husband's coming back. We're going to work on things. I said, great. Now it's like the real work. That was like the first step, but now we're going to make things even better. So I always like sharing these sort of stories. You know, sometimes things can turn around really quickly. That does happen quite often. sometimes it takes a little bit longer. But in most every case, is even if trust has been broken, there are ways to put it back together. So with that, Heather, you were mentioning our trust restoration recipe. And, this is a big thing here that we like to share, because that's what everyone, they come to us and they say, well, trust is broken, and their partner might be saying, you can't, you just need time. You have to have time to put trust back together. And I don't want to put in that time. I honestly don't think that's true. Now, obviously, time makes it easier, but this is why I came up with this recipe right here, because there are some shortcuts to building up some trust. So without further ado, just the few things that we need in this recipe, and we're going to go in quite a bit deeper into each of these things. We're going to talk about them for a bit, but the three things that you need in this recipe, in order to build up trust. So trust, in my opinion, comes from vulnerability, and that vulnerability is made to feel comfortable. So you can't have trust without vulnerability. Number two, vulnerability, it's only really possible if that vulnerability is made to feel safe, if there's some safety around in there. And then three, you get that safety by having predictability with some, I'm going to explain that a little bit further. It's not just any kind of predictability. But anyways, Heather, we've kind of been dance. We've kind of used this topic quite often in the past. We talk about this quite a bit. What do you think about those three things? It seems so simple, but.
Well, it does. Just like if you were to pull out like a recipe for, let's say, like pecan pie. It looks really simple on paper. However, to master an amazing pecan pie, you really have to apply each step correctly, and you kind of have to learn how each one works, right? And that's what I love about this, is that each of these steps is building upon the other, just like a recipe, just like putting something together. You have to do the right steps first, right? We can't just put the pie tray into the oven without anything in it, right? and then set it to bake, right? We have to make sure the right ingredients are going in at the right time. Now, I just want to tell everyone here, this is a sensitive topic. When trust is broken, there is a lot of pain. And so I'm going to make a couple promises. First of all, we are sensitive and aware of what that is like. And we will share some of our personal experiences here and the things that have helped us in our relationships to be able to heal from trust being broken. Because when your heart is on the line and you've been vulnerable, you put forth that vulnerability, like Mark talked about, it has to happen in order to have any trust at all. You have to show or give a certain level of vulnerability. And then when that is threatened or when it's not respected, then that is deeply, deeply painful. And so we have absolutely empathy and compassion for what that feels like. And if, maybe you've been the one that has broken trust, there's an immense amount of guilt and remorse and other emotions on that end of the spectrum. So this is a highly emotionally charged topic. But what we're not going to do is we're not going to sidestep around what it takes to really heal. Okay, because a lot of other experts, friends, you maybe go to your pastor, maybe you go to your sister, your mother, maybe you talk to a counselor, and they give an immense amount of emotion and compassion, which is needed. Like, I'm not trying to say you don't need compassion, but what they neglect to do is give you the actionable steps that are needed to move on from that. And so what Mark and I are not going to do is we're not going to sit in the stew pot. Okay. That's not what we're about. So I want to be sensitive to the fact that emotions are heightened around this topic. And one of the first things that Mark and I always do is we teach emotional processing techniques to our clients. Because when emotions are super heightened on either end of the spectrum, whether it's anger, bitterness, you know, just absolute pain, agony even, of your heart being broken. I mean, is there anything more painful than that, right? Or on the other end of the spectrum, if you're so consumed with guilt and shame that you can't feel like you can forgive yourself, neither of those states are going to be states where you can reason well. It's just not how it works, right? And so it's really important that we recognize that those emotions accompany this situation, and that what we always aim to do is get us, right? I'm going to put ourselves like I'm in your shoes, right? We want to get ourselves to a calm, centered state so that we can really think about what we ideally want and what we can learn from it, even what we can appreciate from it. And then how do we move forward? So I just wanted to bring that into the picture and let you know that that's our promise to you. We don't just allow you to sit in the stew pot. We really encourage you to process through those emotions and then take some action to heal. Does that make sense to everyone? I hope that I articulated that correctly.
Well, I think this really applies really well to what we were talking about in the previous podcast, just a little bit. We were talking a lot about opening up communication, but a big part of that was about understanding. And on either end, whether you are the one that has broken trust or, you know, you're the one that's feeling a bit unsafe, you know, it almost sounds like a lot of what we were talking about the other day was kind of that very thing, like that, hey, we're going to need to actually take some time to process this and understand this and kind of decide ahead of time that we're going to be strong on this, understanding that there's going to be some heightened emotions here. And we actually, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about that point even today a little bit further, because a lot of these things that Heather was just talking about, it, you know, there's a lot of connection in different areas and different tools, like whether you're working on communication or whether you're working on building trust, whether you're working on building romance and intimacy, a lot of these same principles kind of overlap here. So I hope it makes sense, but because they're, yeah. Like I said, there are a lot of overlap, and these are really important, some basic principles that we're going over here.
Yeah. So, Mark, you talked about vulnerability. Mm-hmm. What is a really good idea of what we're talking about with vulnerability?
So here's the thing is I'm thinking about, you know, I'm not just thinking about this kind of point, like where everything is broken and we're putting it back together, but certainly that. But this is like a basic building block of any relationship. If you really think about it, even from like the first moment that you just start talking with someone, you maybe have this crush, you know, a long time ago, and you go up to them to talk to them. There's a little bit of vulnerability there. Maybe you're a really confident person and it's not really that much vulnerability, but there's absolutely in those moments this kind of especially if you're a really shy person, you know, this kind of sense that maybe they're not going to want to talk to me. Maybe they're not going to want to do this or that. And as that, those small interactions are, you know, as you extend that vulnerability and it's made to feel safe, you grow closer together. And the same thing can be said about many other different dynamics in a relationship. You know, you start to trust your partner more physically as you become physically closer together, and that physical aspect of your relationship is made more safe. And as you become more emotionally vulnerable and it's treated well, like you were mentioning earlier, Heather, you grow closer together because you are extending vulnerability. That's what I really mean about this sort of thing. Now, even beyond just being like a building thing, I even think that this extends into repairing relationships as well, because to a certain extent, you know, I don't know about you, Heather, but it's not always easy for me to be that person that reaches out first. You know, if there's been some tension, if there's been an argument, to say, you know, I'm gonna stop this. You know, I'm going to make, you know, it's not always easy. It's you have to be the bigger person there, and that's a little bit of some amount of vulnerability to reach out to the other person when they might be angry at you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of paint this picture of what this looks like with one of our clients, and she's given us permission to share her story. Her name is Leah, and you can look her up on her interview here in the Thriving Marriage or on our YouTube channel. And when Leah first came to us, she had been married for several years. They were expecting their first baby. And about a month before the baby was to be born, her husband told her, "I'm in love with another woman. I've been having an affair, and I want to be with this other person." And so, of course, Leah was absolutely devastated because she had had that vulnerability with her husband, right? And it was not met well, right? It was met with rejection of like the heaviest kind, right? And so when she came to us, she'd been trying some other things. They weren't really working, but she was willing to go first. And that's exactly what Mark's talking about here, is that she was willing to have the vulnerability first. She was willing to set aside some of that fear, some of that pain, and some of that pride a little bit, and say, what do I really want here? I want my family intact. I love this man, and I want him to be in the picture with me and my son. And so then she got to work, but she was the one that was willing to have that vulnerability and go first.
I hear this all the time from other people that we work with. I make a suggestion of, you know, reaching out, having a conversation, you know, talking about this or that. And they'll respond back. They'll say, "No, that's going to be too hard. You know, they're not going to want to talk to me about that. They're going to reject this idea. They're going to." Anyways, they tell me all these reasons why it's going to be too difficult, because it is difficult to put your feelings out there when you're trying to repair things. It's very difficult. And you put a lot of your feelings on the line there, because what happens if they say no? That many times that's, you know, why people are in the position that they're at in the first place when they come our way, is because they've learned that being vulnerable in these sort of situations has been painful. And so they've learned to not really trust their partner in this regard. But that vulnerability, you know, is absolutely needed to go further. So, I mean, but if all we had was vulnerability, I mean, it wouldn't really work. It's not just about vulnerability. That's why we have this whole recipe. Just like, you know, your pecan pie example, you wouldn't just want a pie tin full of pecans.
Right.
But I don't know, Heather, you know, we were talking quite a bit the other day, you know, about some vulnerability that we've shared with each of our respective spouses. I don't know about you, but you know, I know at least in my marriage, this is like a really strong point for us. I imagine it's the same for you, but this is one of the things that I love about my marriage with Jen, is I know we've gotten to this point where anything that we can share with each other, I know it's going to be accepted. That eventually we can get around to understanding each other. And, you know, in other trainings and other videos, I've talked about like depths of intimacy, and that's that right there. You know, it's intimacy and trust are really closely related. That deepest level is where, you know, you can share these hard points, these hurtful points with each other, and it helps you to grow closer together. That's where I feel like I am with Jen. And this has been such a great part of our marriage, that I know that I can be vulnerable with her and we can get through it. Anything. And so I'm what I'm talking about here, why I'm mentioning this, is I'm illustrating the point here that being able to be vulnerable with your partner is a large factor in being able to feel close to them, being able to have a rich relationship with them. I don't want to speak for you, Heather. I'm sure you feel very similarly, but I don't know if you have any comments on that.
Yeah. So for me, it's been definitely a journey. And you talk about having that deepest level of kind of that intimacy and that trust, that vulnerability, they're all so connected, right? And the point where you could say anything and talk about anything, even if it was difficult, or even if it could potentially be painful, that you can still know that it's going to be accepted and that it's okay to talk about it. That's where we are at now, having gone through this path method and using what we teach you know, to thousands of people that have helped transform their relationships. However, for me, for most of my marriage, it wasn't like that. And I want to go down to like the root issues and just share with you really vulnerably what it looks like for me so that you guys can see what it looks like for you. One thing that Mark and I are really, really key on is that we get to the root issues. And the bottom line is that most people tend to focus on the symptoms. They tend to focus on the affair or the overspending of the money or the crossing of a boundary, and they stay stuck there. Even counselors and well-meaning people tend to focus on the symptoms, and they don't figure out why it really happened in the first place. What was the root cause of what really happened, caused that to happen? And like with Leah, we worked with her and her husband on why that happened in the first place. And when they were able to heal at the root level, then they're able to solve the affair, like took care of itself. Like that's the symptom. That's the surface level thing. That's just the fruit of the rotten roots, right? When we can heal the marriage and the relationship at its roots, then we allow the fruit to be healthy and good and have the symptoms of thriving, right? And so that's where she got to. And now she even says, you know, we are stronger and better now than we ever were even before the affair. We've even had clients say like the affair was actually the best thing that ever happened to us because it allowed us to finally figure out what was going wrong for so many years before that even happened. I know it can sound really strange, like an affair is the best thing that ever happened. However, if your marriage is really struggling and suffering for a long time and there's things that aren't being resolved, then it kind of like hits that catalytic point where it's like, boom, now we finally have to figure out what this is. We finally have to solve things. And that allows you then to become healthier and better than ever before. So for me, just being completely vulnerable here, talk about vulnerability, right? for me, I had my heart and trust broken by a family member years and years and years ago, even before I met Ben. And I'm not going to go into the details of that, but for years, I mean, go back 15 years or so, I was carrying an immense amount of distrust and bitterness in my heart. Then I met Ben, fell head over heels in love, made everything seemed like it was going well. So here's an interesting point, is that Ben himself never actually broke my trust. It happened even before the relationship. And sometimes Mark and I, we see this.
Oh, that happens all the time with
me. Yeah. It was broken from a previous relationship, a previous person, a previous experience. And we carry those things with us, even if it's on a deep subconscious level. See, I thought I was fine. I thought I was good. However, that belief, that story in me that I wasn't good enough and that I was going to be hurt again and again and again whenever I opened up my heart, and that if I wasn't X, Y, and Z, if I wasn't the good housewife, if I wasn't meeting all his needs, if I wasn't making him happy, if I wasn't physically attractive, then he was going to leave me, was my internal story. So here's the root, okay? That's the root that was going on inside of me. But what happened on the symptom level, on the external level, and the level that most of us see, is that I would put up barriers with Ben. I wouldn't be fully vulnerable with him. I never fully trusted him. I always kept like this wall of protection between me and him so that he couldn't hurt me, even though he'd never given me reason to. It all came from before. And so carrying that for years created distance between Ben and I, and he could sense it. And then he would be more closed off. And then I would be more closed off because it would scare me that he's closed off. I'm like, oh no, here it comes. He's going to hurt me. You know, even if I didn't articulate those things in my mind, I felt them somewhere inside me on a deeper level, kind of that instinctual fear, that instinctual need to protect myself. And then that would cause me to pull further away from him and to lash out at him in defensiveness. And then he would pull further away. And it created a really challenging cycle that nearly ended our relationship. All right. And so what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, vulnerability is beautiful, and you need to recognize if there are some deeper things going on within you or within your partner. We have to solve the problems at their roots. Because if we just address the affair, if we just say, like a lot of other people will say, just stop the affair. If we just end the affair, everything else will go back to being great. That's not it. We have to go to the roots.
Well, it sounds like you were creating a situation that you were trying to make yourself feel safe, but you weren't having that rich relationship that you're looking for. It's just what we were talking about just a bit ago. So I want to segue this into the next part of the recipe about safety. And so I want to ask, you know, what actually makes a relationship safe? What do you think?
Oh, that is such a beautiful question. You know, you said that, like, I wanted to have that closeness, but I didn't. It's kind of like tug and pull of your own heart, right? Mm-hmm. You want it to be close. You want to have that connection. You want to have that incredible relationship, you know, when you're like 80 years old and you're sitting on a park bench and you're just staring at each other with like fireworks in your eyes still, you know. I wanted to get that place. But then there was something inside of me that was blocking that. For me, it was that I had to heal what was going on inside. And I had to heal, letting go of that bitterness, letting go of that pain, letting go of that fear, so that I could be in a state where I could allow myself to feel safe with him. And just like we were talking about with the recipe here, it's kind of ingredient by ingredient or step by step. And the more that we would open up even just a little bit and have that recognized and have that appreciated and have it made safe, you know, like, oh, wow, that was actually okay. I shared that and it was received. And then vice versa, you know, he would open up with me and share something and I could receive it well, then that created that safety. And that safety is an incredible, beautiful feeling. It is incredible to know that you can be your 100% genuine self with someone, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it, and that you're accepted. Right. So then, I think that's the deepest level of love that there is.
So then it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, extending that vulnerability and then having that vulnerability, you know, you get some sort of sense that it's acceptable, that there's almost like, you know, just like we were talking about the other day with communication, there's some positive feedback. We know that our reaching out like that, our making ourselves vulnerable has been, it's been good. It's good. It's a good thing. Or even vice versa. You know, if our partner is sharing something very personal, emotional, sharing of themselves physically, it's made to be a good thing. There's some positive feedback. So is that what really makes things safe?
Yeah. I think that's a really big part of it. It's being vulnerable and then having it not rejected, but accepted. And so what's really important to know is that as we're starting out to heal a relationship, like we said at the beginning, you may be the one that needs to do that first. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have to move through the fear and know what you really want.
I want to give a you know, almost like the negative example here, because I hear so many times I hear, so women will come in and they'll say, there'll be a problem. And, you know, this is specifically an intimacy and trust sort of issue. And they'll say, well, my partner, my husband, you know, is complaining that we're not intimate. We're not having as much sex as he would have liked. And he's really felt rejected. And then when I start talking to these women, then they also say, well, I was also, you know, sometimes I felt like I wasn't good enough there. I wasn't pleasing. And, you know, some of the things that you were saying, if I didn't do this right, then. Or they might say that, you know, they didn't feel attractive, and, you know, there's sometimes very real comments, and I just have to shake my head sometimes and think, you know, okay, what are these people doing? They're wanting this thing and then they're this intimacy and then they're sabotaging it by, you know, making complaints and, you know, making it really negative. And they're taking that, they're wanting the intimacy and then they're not making it safe. They're wanting the vulnerability, but not making it safe. And it's, looking at it from the outside, you know, it's easy for me to say, okay, well, that's exactly it. And I shake my head and be like, okay, well, what are these people doing? Don't they see it? But at the same time, I get it, because, you know, when you're right in the middle of things, you don't always see your own problems. You don't always
see exactly
your own mistakes. And that's why it's so helpful to get some help, right?
Yeah. To have the outside perspective of a coach that can guide you and help you, because I didn't see that was what was going on within me. those years, you know, that deep down my limiting belief, my story was that I wasn't good enough, you know, and that it wasn't safe to trust people or open up my heart. That was so kind of buried beneath inside that all I could see was the outside things of he won't open up to me. He won't talk to me. You know, it was just so directed at him and so directed at the symptoms that, because that's where the pain is. You know, if you're looking at a tree, the ugliness is the fruit that we see. We don't see the roots. We don't see what's deeper beneath. And so again, that's why it's so crucial to have that feedback and have someone that has the outside perspective that can guide us and show us what's really going on. Give us that clarity.
So we kind of talked a bit about, you know, what makes a relationship generally safe, but, you know, sometimes if the trust has really been broken, it's harder to get to that general safety. You have to almost think more in the moment. So, you know, I thought to myself, okay, well, here's a really good question for the podcast here. What makes an individual moment more safe, or especially emotionally safe? Because that's, you're going to need a little bit of that if you're going to, you know, start to address some of these root issues that you were talking about. Any thoughts on that, Heather?
Yeah, so I'll just share from my personal experience. When I can feel emotionally safe would be when Ben and I both processed through our heightened emotions and we come at it at a intention and that emotional state that we want to understand. It goes back to having understanding and empathy. So we can't come at each other when we're both really upset, when we're both really mad, you know, when we're both really hurt. That's those emotions aren't where the reasoning part is. And that's not where we can really work together as a team. So we have to like emotionally process through those things so that emotions aren't so heightened. And then we can discuss what's really going on, like the root issues, the deeper issues, in a really calm manner. And if we both set up the conversation, knowing what our intention is, that we want to solve this. We deeply care about each other. We want this to work. So we kind of frame the conversation, as you call it, Mark, frame the conversation beforehand so that we go into it knowing that it's safe.
So this really kind of brings us into the third part of the recipe, because it sounds to me like as soon as you've processed things and you know kind of where each other's intentions are at, things are a bit more predictable. You know, okay, Ben is at a place where he's probably going to listen to me, and I know that I'm at a place where I can be calm. Things have become a little bit more predictable in that moment. That's kind of what makes that moment a bit more safe.
Right. And if there's been severe, you know, harm done and maybe some really unhealthy patterns, then what we always, you know, coach here is that you create some healthy boundaries to create that predictability and create that safety. And so, you know, Ben and I were in a really safe place right now. But, you know, I remember like talking again with Leah, like about creating some healthy boundaries with her husband so that they could feel safe, because it is hard to open up. And so sometimes you have to talk about creating some healthy boundaries. And I see a comment here about, it sounds like someone's having an affair, but still wants to have sex with you. And so there would definitely need to be some healthy boundaries set there to have self-respect and have safety and to know that you're going to be okay, right? Because if you continue in that same route, it's just going to perpetuate the same problem.
Well, yeah, that what that person is talking about, you know, their partner's having an affair, but they still want to have sex. That's asking for that vulnerability, but not really having the safety there.
Exactly.
You know, or the predictability. You know, if they're still having an affair, where I'm guessing this person making the comment has no idea whether their marriage is going to stay stable, whether they're going to stay together. And that makes for a really difficult situation to be very intimate and sexual and, you know, open up like that. So, yeah, like you were saying, I think boundaries are a really good way to instill a bit of that predictability. You know, hey, if I have this line right here, I know that, you know, I know all the parameters of where everything is at and what's going to happen because I have these lines right here. And certainly this is a discussion, you know, we could have a whole, you know, many discussions on just setting boundaries and appropriate boundaries, but I mean, we don't have time for that today. Now, even further, like, you know, I was actually talking about this with my with Jen, and I made the comment. I said, you know, a big part of, you know, building up trust is a bit of that predictability. And she's like, well, you know, you could be predictable and your spouse might be very angry or erratic. Well, I said, well, erratic isn't predictability, but she's saying, okay, well, maybe they're going to be angry consistently. And so obviously not all predictability, it's not all equal. So what are we, certainly we're looking for that predictability, but what, you know, what do you think, Heather? What are we actually looking for? I mean, because there's predictability and then there's another component here.
Right. Well, there needs to be positive predictability, not dysfunctional predictability, right? If we're, it goes back to that conditioned response that if I'm vulnerable, I get hurt. If I'm vulnerable, I get hurt. If I'm vulnerable, I get hurt. So I'm just not going to be vulnerable anymore. That's predictability, mm-hmm. right? So we want to get to the other end of the spectrum where we start to change that story, which is such a crucial part of our PATH method. You get the perspective of where they're coming from, you make those adjustments, and then you start to tell a new story. And that happens with time and consistency, right? As we start to tell a new story, then I say, oh, wow, I can be vulnerable and it's safe. I can be vulnerable and it's safe. Oh, wow, it's actually safe to be vulnerable. And we can start to change some of those internal stories. That's the exact journey that I went on, where it was like, it's not safe to be vulnerable. It's not, you're gonna get hurt. And so put up some barriers to keep yourself safe. And now the story has been completely transformed on an internal level, not a surface level, that it is safe to be vulnerable. In fact, it's beautiful and it's everything I've ever wanted. And now I'm not resisting it anymore. There's no pushback, there's no fear. It's really safe. And it's beautiful because now I know that that story has been shifted. And then the external results change as well. There's no more tension. There's no more putting up walls. And there's no more of that negative cycle of I'm going to pull away from you. Now you pull away from me. I'm in fear because you're pulling away from me. So I'm going to pull away further. And then we're going to create a lot of tension so that it all blows up. And then we have to pick up the pieces. That's completely been resolved. I lost my train of thought.
No, that's fine. I think a comment that you made earlier when you were talking about your interactions with Ben, you guys were talking about, okay, after we process things, after we've, you know, kind of set our intentions, I think this is a big part of this predictability component. Because, you know, especially when that tension is high, it's really, really difficult to kind of turn that corner. And I do think that, you know, being a little bit more present in the moment, I think deciding ahead of time to be safe or predictable, you know, having some values set up ahead of time is something that really helps, you know, in the long run, you know, in the general sense of being more calm and even and predictable, but even in the moment. So, I mean, this, you know, I know for me, myself, you know, I remember consciously deciding very, very early in the marriage that, you know, I would never really specifically put Jen down. Like, even if I was upset, even if I was, you know, even if we were arguing, you know, I made a decision a while back, and I've shared with this, with these sort of things with her. I said, you know, even if I'm upset, I'm never gonna, I don't ever want to get to the point where I'm, you know, disparaging you or putting you down. And this has made it really made it so much easier for us to come closer together. And then this seems like such a low bar to set that it doesn't happen in, you know, in many, many marriages that I encounter. But even in the moment, this really works. You know, if Jen and I have had an argument and I come together and say, hey, look, you know, just like you were talking about what you do with Ben, you know, if I say, hey, look, I want to make sure that we are going to listen to each other because I can see that we're really upset. And I know this isn't where we want to be. So let's take some time to understand what's going on. Okay. We've now made at least the immediate future a bit more predictable. We know that this is going to be safe, which is, it reminds me of an interaction I had with a client, must have been probably a few weeks ago. And she was telling me how I was making some suggestions on a conversation that she should have with her husband. And I was saying, you really need to be open with him about some of these feelings that you're having. And she said, you know, I don't know if I can tell him these sort of things. And I asked her, I said, okay, well, do you feel like you can be open with me? And she said, well, yeah. I asked her even further, do you feel like you've been completely open with me, that you haven't held anything back? She says, yes, I haven't held anything back. I said, why do you think it was so easy to open up to me? I said, we've only spoken a few times here. It seems like you really trust me quite a bit. And she thought about that for a moment. I wasn't trying to like toot my own horn. I was like, hey, look how much you trust me. No, I was trying to make a point. She said, well, I know that you're not going to get upset with me when I talk to you. I know that you're going to be very accepting, and I know you're going to be these. I said, of course. This is the specific reason why people go to therapists and counselors and coaches and whatnot, because these components are all here, or they're expected to be there. You know, you have that ability to be vulnerable. You know it's going to be safe. You know that the situation is going to be a bit predictable. You know that they're going to be accepting. They're going to talk about it in a calm manner. They're going to be really even about it. And so I turned to her and said, okay, so these are the things that you are expecting from me. So let's talk about how do we make sure that this happens in your conversation that we're going for. Make sure that this is happening in your relationship. And we went about talking about that. And, you know, then she had a very successful conversation with her husband. And these things work when you sit down and actually apply them.
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay? Because yeah. It looked like my camera just got weird. Okay, good. We just had a comment here. Oh, go ahead.
I was saying there seems to be a little bit of lag with the audio, but I think I can hear you just fine.
Okay, no worries. A comment here about that we need to look at the root issues, and it's all about the victim and what they need to do for the benefit of the marriage. And no one talks about what adjustments and changes the person that cheated needs to make for the benefit of the marriage. Mm. I want to make sure that this is really crystal clear right now. If there is any kind of dysfunctional, unhealthy behavior going on, such as an affair, then it's crucial that both sides do look at the root issues. It cannot be one-sided. And we don't like to use the word victim, first of all, okay? Because there's both pain on both sides. And we absolutely do have healthy boundaries for the person that is having the affair, and that there are changes and adjustments that they need to make for the benefit of the marriage. So if that didn't come across clearly, I want to make sure that comes across clearly right now.
I think we kind of get into this sort of mode of thing. You know, a lot of people that come our way, they're trying to fix things on their own. And, you know, so sometimes in our discussions, we might come across as being a little bit less understanding or not holding the quote unquote, the offender accountable. But this is a regular topic of conversation when I get a little bit more deep into individual cases. It's just, it's a little bit harder especially with our audience, to assume that the other partner is going to be working on things, to assume that they're going to be, you know, doing everything that they're supposed to. So we talk to the individual often, because that's what you have control over. You have control over your own actions, and we can certainly give advice to help influence your partner. And certainly if they are willing to work on things, I will have a million and one suggestions, things that they need to do in order to fix the situation.
Yeah, just a really quick example was, we had a client whose husband was an alcoholic and very volatile, very angry, yelling, name calling, very hostile. And so every time she would try to talk to him, it would turn into a huge blow up. And so immediately instituted a healthy boundary that if that behavior is what's going on, first you frame it, you pattern interrupt. Okay. And that's what Ben and I had to do. And that's what we teach. If you're in some really negative cycles there, then you need to pattern interrupt and start to break those cycles and set that intention. Look, I know that usually when we talk about these things, it tends to escalate. It tends to get really heated. And I don't want that. So I want to understand you, and I want to approach this in a different way. Will you help me with that? Is that something that you can work on with me? And then start to come at the entire conversation in a new way, rather than just immediately launching into the same old patterns that tended to escalate the conversation. And then framing it from the beginning that this is what we're going to do. And if this unhealthy behavior of being being volatile, being angry, yelling at me, name calling, starts to happen, then the conversation will immediately end and we won't pick it up again until we're both in a calm state and we can talk about this calmly and respectfully. And then she had to enforce that healthy boundary. Now, I think we should do an entire podcast on healthy boundaries because it's a really big thing.
Oh, and I yeah. We talk about boundaries all the time. I probably have, you know, I know I have multiple trainings for the members on boundaries. It's such an important topic.
Yeah, we will absolutely get into that. And I understand it's one of the hardest things to do, especially if your spouse is already pulling away. And maybe if they're in an affair or if they want out of the relationship, you're afraid that doing that is going to push them even further away. However, we know that the fruit of it is it actually draws them closer to you. It creates a healthiness to the relationship. And here's the key word, bringing it into our whole trust. It creates safety, which is all about making the relationship safe, so that you can start to restore that trust. Wow. So we will definitely do some healthy boundaries. I see a lot of you excited about that. So we will definitely do an entire podcast dedicated to healthy boundaries, what they are, how to set them, and how to do it in a way that actually draws them closer to you rather than pushing them away. So that is it for today. Mark, thank you so much. And I hope that this has been valuable for you. I encourage you to think about and even really tune in to your inner self on what really stood out to you. What did you need to hear today? What were you craving to know? Maybe it was the hope that if trust has been broken, that there is possibility, there is ability to heal from that fully. That if there's anger or bitterness in your heart, like there is when it was in mine for years and years and years, that that can be forgiven. If there is guilt and shame and you feel like you can never be forgiven because you've hurt people so deeply, that you can see that there is that ability to forgive yourself and to have others forgive you and that you can heal and move on from that. That is what life is about. We are all imperfect beings. So give each other some grace and know that we can heal and that we can build some patterns of safety and we can build trust through using this recipe line upon line here a little bit, right? Applying it step by step that you can get there. So this brings us to our marriage myth buster, which we've already busted. I love it.
There's still more to share about this though, because you know, myth buster, okay. I hear people, especially the spouse pulling away, the one that wants the divorce, they say once trust has been broken, it can never be repaired. And you know what? You're right. We already kind of busted this a bit. I mean, you've talked about how even in your own marriage, you guys were really pulling apart. I know there's parts in my marriage where Jen and I had pulled apart a little bit. I've seen it in other marriages, other people that we've helped with. And the thing is, these moments where, you know, after you do repair it, I almost universally see if they do it well, their marriage becomes stronger because of what's happened. So not only can it absolutely be repaired, oftentimes this can be a moment to build off of. It can be, I look back on my struggles now that I've had in my life and in my relationship with Jen. I look back on them and say, you know what, that was really good for us. That was really good for me. Sounds odd. I'm thankful for a lot of the struggles that I have had. I wouldn't be in the same place that I am right now if I hadn't had them. So absolutely, things can be repaired, even really deep pain. You start off small and you build up that trust again.
Absolutely. So yeah, if trust has been broken, it's not the end. In fact, it could be just the beginning. And if you take a 30,000 foot view from it, you could both go away just completely broken and you can just remain broken, or you can heal and become better and stronger than ever before. And like Mark said, you could look back and say, I'm actually grateful that that happened because it made me a better person. It made me stronger. It made me more capable of healing and more capable of forgiving others and myself. And so every challenge that comes our way is actually an incredible blessing. It's actually an incredible learning lesson for us, an ability for us to improve ourselves as well as to help others. So thank you so much, Mark. So if you are wanting more help with this, then here's our special news. We are actually coming out with our brand new coaching program. We've taken everything that we have learned after working with thousands of clients all around the world and improving the process even more. So we're really excited to roll that out. It's our PATH method 2.0, getting things even better and even more incredible results that have just been pouring in every single day. You guys see them here in the group, and we get them every single day, just flooding in. And so we will be doing that. And we want to give you guys the first opportunity to join. We're going to have only 10 spots open for this brand new coaching program. And so if you want one of those, you can get in right now before we're actually going to raise the price in 2 weeks. And so you can go apply at highthrivecoaching.com/apply and get into the new program before the price is raised for this awesome new improved coaching program. And next week, we are going to uncover why your spouse wants out. If you're heading towards divorce and separation, uncovering why your spouse wants out is what 95% of people miss. And if they want out, if you can get them back. So we are excited to talk about that next week, and we will talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.